You're listening to Cross the Border. My name is Nicholas. We're going through the Bible, and we're in the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verse 33. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, The 15th day of this 7th month shall be a feast of tabernacles. For 7 days unto Yahuwah, on the first day, shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. On the 8th day shall be a holy convocation unto you. You shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. It is a solemn assembly, and you shall do no servile work. These are the feasts of Yahuwah, which you shall proclaim holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord Yahuwah, a burnt offering and a meat offering, a sacrifice and drink offerings, everything upon his day. Beside the Sabbaths of Yahuwah, beside your gifts, and beside all your vows, and beside all your freewill offerings, which you give unto Yahuwah. Also, the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto Yahuwah 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath. So the 15th day of the 7th month, so this is like a harvest feast, basically. When you've gathered the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto you 7 days. On the 7th day shall be a Sabbath. On the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. On the first day, 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. So it says 7 days. So this is from Sabbath to Sabbath, basically, keeping a feast, because 8 days is you start on a Sabbath and you end on a Sabbath. So it's from Sabbath to Sabbath. That's what this means here. And it's the 15th day of the 7th month, from Sabbath to Sabbath. And that's what you find. That's why I believe that the Creator's calendar is always uniform throughout the months, except for the length of the calendar varies from month to month by 1 day because of the moon, because of the new moon days vary from month to month by a day. Some months you have 2 new moon days, some months you have 1 new moon day. So on the month, months that you have 2 new moon days, of course, they would be spread out. One would be, of course, the first day of the month is always a new moon. And if you have a second one, it would be the last day of the month. So when you have 2 new moon days together, it's the last day of the month and the first day of the month following. So the months are always uniform, which makes the Sabbaths always on the 8th, the 15th, and of course, that would be then you would have the 22nd and the 29th. The Sabbaths would always be uniformly on the same days of the month if you're going to have go by his moon as being the regulator of his calendar, or his calendar in the sky. And I believe that's plainly taught in Scripture. Now, it takes a little bit of time to wrap your mind around it. I know it took a little bit of time to wrap my mind around it, but the longer I considered it, the longer I watched his calendar in the sky, the more convinced I became that the month is regulated by the moon. And of course, then we have the instruction in the Scripture on the keeping of the months, and basically what they did to correct the calendar, the first month being Abib, and Abib is an occurrence. When Abib occurs on a new moon, then you have the first day of the first month. And some days they had to, some months, 7 of 19 months to be precise, they had to have 13 moons in a year waiting for Abib, or waiting so that they could say this is the first month. So the calendar in the sky is self-correcting. It kept you on the seasons, basically. That's the way his calendar worked. They would, when Abib came, and that's the harvest of the winter wheat, when it was ripe in the bud, in the field, and you had a new moon, then you knew that it was the new moon of the first month of the year, or the first moon of the year. And like I said, sometimes they had to go, they would go, well, it's the new moon, but we don't have a Beeb yet. We have to wait another month or another moon. So the calendar self-corrected to the seasons. 7 of 19 years, they had to have an extra month. And of course, the 12th month of the Hebrew calendar was Adar. And if they needed a 13th month, they called it second Adar. So every 7 of 19 years, they had second Adar and a 13 moon or moont year. I hope that by repeating this that you kind of get the idea that you can wrap your mind around it. But for the children of Israel, for people that grew up with this and watching the moon, they didn't have a calendar on their wall like we have a calendar on our wall. They didn't have to have a piece of paper to tell them what month it was and what day of the month it was. No, they just looked at the sky and they knew because their calendar was written in the sky. To them, it would seem bizarre to look at a piece of paper to find out what month it is because the months of the modern calendar have absolutely nothing to do with the moon. The moon is, you know, does not regulate anything anymore. Okay, there we go. Chapter 23, verse 39. Also on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto Yahuwah 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath. On the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. And you shall take on the first day the boughs of a goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahuwah your God 7 days. And you shall keep it a feast unto Yahuwah 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. And you shall dwell in booths 7 days, all that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths. Basically, the booth, of course, is what we would call a tent today. And basically, they were to go on a camping trip and celebrate and go on a camping trip. I mean, people do that for fun today. I mean, a lot of people do it for fun today. They go on a camping trip and they enjoy the woods or the wilderness or wherever. They set up their tent and they have a feast and they just have a good time for 7 days, you know. That's basically what we have here. The Feast of Tabernacles is a 7-day camping trip. It begins on the Sabbath, and then it ends on the next Sabbath. So 7 days, they do this. You shall keep it a feast unto Yahuwah 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You shall dwell in, and I'll just say tents, 7 days, all that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths or tents, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahuwah, your God. And Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. So basically, these feasts, of course, there was the Passover and then the Days of Unleavened Bread, to signify when he brought them out of Egypt, and here to signify that he made them to dwell in tents or booths when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. They have the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. So they were to leave their homes, their cities, and they were supposed to pack up their tents and pack up food for 7 days. They were supposed to go out there and they were supposed to have a feast and pretty much just rejoice before Yahuwah for 7 days. You know, I guess the word today would, they were supposed to party for 7 days. They were supposed to feast and have this camping trip for 7 days, basically. I don't know. Why wouldn't we want to do this today? I think this should be one that we should keep and go and celebrate for. I think this would be better than keeping, let the world, bustle about, and worry themselves over their commercial Christmas and give gifts to each other. And they can call it Jesus' birthday if they want. They can do that, but we know it's not the Messiah's birthday. Nowhere are we commanded to celebrate his birthday. And how do you celebrate somebody's birthday? By not giving gifts to him, but giving gifts to yourselves. You know, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous. Of course, the whole thing sprung out of paganism and preceded Yahushua and his birth. They gave gifts to each other to celebrate the winter solstice. Of course, the death of the sun, basically. And that's why it's called Christmas, because their Messiah is the sun. And that's what they're celebrating, and they were celebrating the death of the Son. And Christmas, or Christmas, means Christ's death. So you see the pagan roots of it, and of course chopping down the tree and, you know, decking it up with is all proclaimed in the Old Testament as a pagan ritual, that the children of Israel were not supposed to do those things. And I've had a lot of Christians, so-called, or genuinely believe what they were saying, to try to convince me that it's okay that we do these things. Well, I think actually they're trying to convince themselves. But I read the scripture over and over and over, and the more I read it, the more I'm convinced that the opposite is true, that we should not be doing these things, because the scripture says that we should not allow the pollution of idols in our congregation. And maybe I'll take a minute to look that up during the break. But if you'd, well, type in your e-sword, pollution of idols or pollutions of idols, as something that we're not supposed to allow. And that's what these things are. They are the pollution of idols, basically. They are nothing else. If we're bringing in pagan holly or holy days and Christianizing them, then we're bringing the pollution of idols into the congregation. And we're supposed to be pushing those things out. We're not supposed to allow idolatry in. You know, we plainly read in Acts that we're to restrain ourselves from idolatry, from things offered to idols. And the whole thing is, if we're bringing it in, is, oh, it's not offered to an idol now because we're Christianizing it. You know, we're going to have our honey glazed ham on Christmas or the death of the Sunday, you know, the winter solstice, but we're going to call it his birthday, and we're going to call it Christ's death instead of the death of the sun, because that's what the whole winter solstice and the 25th or the, I mean, because it's in the shortest days of the year, of course, we all know that, the winter solstice, where they celebrate the death of the sun for 3 days, and then they say that the sun rose again. Of course, I wonder where they got that idea. But they celebrate the death of the sun. Of course, the sun doesn't die for 3 days. We know that. We know that they just kind of melded the whole idea of the death and resurrection of the Messiah into that, to Christianize it. And of course, let me ask you, if it's his birthday, what does his death have to do with his birthday? And what does the death of the Son have to do with it? Now, you know, just the more I study, the more I read the scripture, and I guess if I just remained ignorant, didn't look into these things, or perhaps like some people do, they search the scripture diligently, looking for something to justify or to authorize keeping the pagan holy days. And they do that, you know, and some of that's pretty convincing. But like I said, the more I read the scripture for myself, the more unconvinced I become. So we have his three feast days during the year here. Now, I don't believe that we can sacrifice animals for sin. We do sacrifice animals. So would it hurt us to have to roast a lamb and, you know, to have a feast, to sacrifice an animal for a feast? No, it wouldn't be, because we're not sacrificing it for sin. And so, you know, I would rather keep his feast days if I have to keep feast days. I see nothing that says that we can't keep the feast days, that we can't, you know, sacrifice an animal for a feast, because that's what we're doing. We're not sacrificing the animal for sin. You know, I mean, when we go down to the corner restaurant or burger stand and you get a hamburger and they sacrifice that animal so that you could eat it, they didn't sacrifice it for sin. So it's not against the law to eat it in that case, or when you have your roast on a holiday or on a Sabbath day or whatever day that you may have, or you throw a steak on the barbecue, we don't think anything of it, of the sacrifice of an animal to eat it in that instance. Well, these are things which I believe we really need to prayerfully consider. And yes, I'm not really celebrating the Christmas or the Ashtaroth holy days in my household anymore. That's a beginning, at least, for me. And I haven't for many years. And though I'm sensitive to what other people are doing, because most people can't receive it. They aren't ready to receive the truth. Even people that are, you know, Christians are not ready to receive the truth, many of them. Chapter 23, verse 44, and Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feasts of Yahuwah. And that brings us to another chapter, chapter 24 and verse 1. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure olive oil, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually, without the veil of the testimony in the tabernacle of the congregation, shall Aaron order it from even unto morning before Yahuwah continually. It shall be a statute forever in your generation. So that the children of Israel were to bring olive oil, that they might have light in the lamps every even, from the evening to the morning continually. He shall order the lamps upon the pure candlestick before Yahuwah continually. And you shall take fine flour and bake 12 cakes thereof. 2/10 deals shall be in one cake. And now we're getting back into the tabernacle, the priest tabernacle sacrifice system, of which we don't have a tabernacle and we don't have a temple anymore. So we'll just go through this because we're going through the scripture. Thou shalt take fine flour and bake 12 cakes thereof. 2/10 deals shall be in one cake. You shall set them in two rows, six upon a row, upon the pure table before Yahuwah. And you shall put pure frankincense upon each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial, even an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Every Sabbath he shall set it in order before Yahuwah continually, being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. And it shall be Aaron's and his sons, and they shall eat it in the holy place, for it is most holy unto him of the offerings unto Yahuwah made by fire by a perpetual statute. And every time I read that it shall be most holy, that it is most holy, it is always an offering for the priests and their family. Of course, the priests and their family, they didn't have an inheritance in the land. They couldn't raise sheep or grain for themselves. They had to eat, basically. So it was most holy to support the priests and their family. And the sons, okay, it shall be, yeah, Aaron's perpetual statute, verse 10 of chapter 24. And the son of an Israelitish woman, whose father is an Egyptian, okay, was an Egyptian, went out among the children of Israel, and this son of the Israelitish woman and a man of Israel strove together in the camp. So we have here a man who is of mixed race. He's half Egyptian and half Israelite. And he strives with a man of Israel in the camp. And the Israelitish woman's son blasphemed the name and cursed, and they brought him unto Moses, and his mother's name was Shelomith, the daughter of Debri of the tribe of Dan. And they put him in ward, that the mind of Yahuwah might be showed them. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, bring forth him that hath cursed without the camp, and let all that heard him lay their hands upon his head, and let all the congregation stone him. And thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel, saying, Whosoever curseth his God shall bear his sin, and he that blasphemeth the name of Yahuwah, he shall surely be put to death. And all the congregation shall certainly stone him, as well as the stranger, as he that is born in the land, when he blasphemeth the name, shall be put to death. And here it says the name, and they've added of the Lord. It's in italics so you can see the name. But it's referring to nothing but the name. And of course it says the name here in this verse too. He that blasphemed the name of Yahuwah shall surely be put to death. It says, when he blasphemeth the name shall be put to death. And he that killeth any man shall surely be put to death. And of course here we're referring to murder. Because when you carried out an execution, it wasn't murder. I mean, it would be kind of silly if they were ordered to stone someone for capital offense, and then everyone who stoned him had to be put to death. So we know that here the word kill is referring to murder. So he that murders any man shall surely be put to death, and he that killeth a beast shall make it good, beast for beast. So if you accidentally or kill a beast that belongs to someone else, you're to make it good. And if a man cause a blemish in his neighbor, as he hath done, so shall it be done to him. And so, you know, this is where you get this is called the eye for an eye statute. Eye for eye and limb for limb. And we'll go on here and maybe we'll make a comment on that. The whole idea of the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is, if I accidentally knock out your tooth, you're going to come to me and go, well, I want to knock out your tooth, and I'm going to go, let me make it good. I will pay you. I will recompense you. The idea also is a just recompense, that people don't become rich because they took someone to law and get an unjust reward for being harmed.